You're listening to Cadence, a podcast for creatives. I'm Hafsa.
And I'm Yen.
And if you're new to the podcast, Cadence is a conversation around topics that we wish we'd been more informed about when we started out on our career paths. The hope is to arm you, the listener, with some takes and tips that might be of service as you venture out on your own unique path. And especially today, just to have a fun conversation. This is the last episode of our first season. Yeah, and we did it.
I can't believe it. I mean, we did it. We did it in a short amount of time,
I feel like. Yeah, it came together so quickly and just so well. And I don't know, it's been a huge pleasure to have these conversations with you and all the guests that we've had. And I don't know, I feel like every episode has been a learning experience for me. Like, I always try to do something every year that, you know, particularly helps me to kind of grow in my craft. And, you know, I think reaching out to other people is so important. So I'm so grateful for that time when you, you know, just texted me. I'm like, hey, let's go and have some coffee and chat about stuff. And it ended up blossoming into a great friendship and also a really cool project.
I know. I want people to recognize, look at what can happen in 6 months.
Yes.
It really, we strategized, we jotted it down, and then we committed to it. Yeah. And I think that is really, that's more than half of it, right?
Absolutely.
Like committing to doing the thing when you have the idea.
I think that idea of commitment is so important, particularly in the creative space, because I think sometimes we have sort of loosey-goosey jobs, right? Sometimes the things that we do don't necessarily have, you know, a construct of time set up on them. And, you know, we kind of have this sort of artificial leeway to sort of do whatever we want. And eventually the thing is going to get done.
Right.
But I think it's really important to kind of set those, not like deadlines or goals in your head, but, you know, maybe a goalpost is a better way of looking at it. Because I think with something like this podcast, it's like when you have a project in mind, or, you know, even if you're working with a client, or if you happen to be the client, you know, setting those sort of time guardrails for yourself and making sure that, you know, it, in order to have, you know, whatever that artifact, you know, might look like at the end of, you know, your pot of gold or at the end of your rainbow, you know, you're kind of allotting the necessary time to actually move towards that thing. No, I mean.
Yeah, it makes me think a lot about when we had Lynette on.
Yeah, and that
really valuable point. It was a good reminder for me and maybe for you too, for those of us that have even been doing this for a long time, that the value of something isn't shouldn't be prefaced by how much time it takes,
exactly.
And that the hourly work can be a little bit dangerous to work that way too, and to really value the skill and the talent and the years of training that you bring to it, rather than the amount of time that you might stew over something, because the client may not be happy with the number of hours that you're ruminating or taking notes, and they may not account for that, right? So it's all about committing to the project and then working through your process and valuing the package.
Absolutely. That's really well said. And so for this episode too, you know, we don't really have, well, I shouldn't say we don't have a guest. For this episode, we are the guests. We're the hosts.
We're always the guests.
We're always the guests. For this episode, we really, you know, given that it's, you know, we're in 2024 as we speak, we're sitting in the future. Our past episodes, you know, kind of took place in that golden time of 2023 when so many things were happening in life and in the world. And we thought it would be really nice to just kind of look back on, you know, the past year of work, the past year of ourselves, and kind of seeing, you know, how we've evolved, right? I mean, I think every year is, you know, a little bit of a, you evolve every year, similar to a Pokemon, you know, we kind of find our next iteration and our next form.
I hope so.
And so, you know, I guess I kind of want to kick it to you, Yen, because I know you've had, you know, a really exciting year. So much has happened. Similarly for me, you know, probably more things than I would have liked to have happened, but many things were good. So we'll leave it at that there. But yeah, what kind of happened for you, you know, just in this year, this past year of work and creating, and, you know, what are some of those takeaways that have kind of stuck with you, and what are you thinking about going into this new year as well?
Yeah, I always tend to reflect on the past year and what would I take and what would I do differently. And I will say that 2023 was such a fulfilling year in the way that it was It was my most fiscally successful year. It was my most, there were more projects and more sustained relationships than the last 12 years before it.
Wonderful.
And that was really, really rewarding to take a step back and say, I don't have to constantly churn and worry the way that I churned and worried the maybe 11, 10 years before that. But I also continued to relearn the lessons that I try to pass on to others, one of which was working with a difficult situation, difficult personality, and recognizing that one of the things that I tell students is that if you know in the first few minutes that something is off or it's wrong and you feel it in your gut, that feeling's never going to change. You're going to come into play with personalities or characters in and outside of your field that, in my case, will burgle your time. And
time burglar.
They will take it willingly and happily, and they'll step over boundaries that you do and you don't explicitly communicate. And as soon as you feel that feeling, trust your gut.
Yes.
And don't continue that ride. And I know that in the beginning, it's terribly difficult to do that because you say, well, this is paying X amount of dollars. I really need this job or assignment. And what I have learned over the years is that when you commit to an experience like this and you step into that realm, you're always going to end up getting paid less because your hourly, the stress, the strife is always going to cost you more than what you're getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's happened to me 100% of the time something felt off.
Same.
it's only happened to me maybe two or three times over the years I've been in this industry. But you always know, you always know in hindsight, I knew it when, and it's usually in the first meeting or the first 5 minutes or 30 seconds.
You see the red flags, right?
You see it right away. And they're always very typical. It's somebody that it's not even like they're asking. It's just like they're claiming something that maybe you weren't ready to give, or maybe you weren't in that process already.
Yeah.
And it's always there. So I urge emergent, seasoned, whoever you are, that when you are working with a client, that you should trust yourself first, because you teach people how you want to be treated.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't look past the red flags is something that I continue to learn. You know, if you do see, you know, the signs of a time burglar in the vicinity, don't ignore it. You know, don't try to look past it and think, oh, maybe it's just, you know, a thing. Maybe it'll go away. Maybe this, you know, project will turn out fine. This collaboration will be fine, because kind of to Yen's point, it probably won't. Uh-huh. It's going to show in that final product. It's going to show in your stress level, in your time, in your gut feelings. So don't look past the red flag, just in general in life. if you see it.
In
see
a relationship, in a client. I mean, Hafsa, what did you do when you were feeling that?
Oh gosh. Well, in the past, sometimes I did look past the red flags, which is why I give that piece of advice. But also, I think at least for me, I have an odd personality, and that I'll suppress a lot of my emotions. And you know, if I encounter someone, and I can think of a specific, you know, couple of people. You know, when I encounter those kinds of personalities, you know, I try to adapt, because sometimes I find that, you know, adapting to different workflows, different personalities, even if you kind of sense they're going to, you know, give you some trouble or some strife in the long run, I find that adapting to it can kind of pad and cushion a little bit of that stress. Mm-hmm. But it's not something that I recommend, because it's stressful. Like at the end of the day, you look back on the project. I made a recording of myself during one of these projects where I was literally talking to my future self, and I was telling myself, don't ever do this to yourself again. You're going to regret. I'm literally in tears in this video, and it's still on my phone. And so I kind of look back on that, and I'm like, you know, you're right. Past me is right, and I'm gonna listen to that. So I'm not in that situation again.
Yeah, that's so smart. You just reminded me of a time that the one and only time I ever cried at work.
No. It's always the worst when you're crying at work.
It's I mean, you don't mean to cry at work. I think I was getting paid. I was getting paid $19,000 a year at this nonprofit, and I was working with someone that was ill prepared. Mm-hmm. Would ask me to do things that were so basic, and then I'd say, "Well, it can't print vertically. You sent me a horizontal file." You know, things like that where I just get so frustrated. I wish that I had made a recording for myself then. That's so smart. Oh, goodness.
Yelling at yourself from the past.
Oh, that's a good piece of advice. Do that, people. When you're down yourself. And out, send yourself a video reminder that you don't want to be in that place again.
Create an artifact. You'll remember it. It is still with you.
Okay, what else are we leaving behind from this past year?
I want to say we're leaving behind assumptions. This is something I've kind of learned, you know, over time, especially. So when I first started working as a graphic designer, you know, I didn't always have that sort of sensibility of, you know, trying to gather information, gather context, and really understand, you know, as much as I, you know, could understand about, you know, whatever a project was or, you know, what a client's desires were. I just sort of went in with the assumption of like, you know, I've been hired to create something. I'm going to create it. I'm not going to ask a whole lot of questions. The client is always right. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think what you find out is that that isn't always true. And I think some of this kind of goes back to the conversations that we've had with other guests, just kind of around how as a creative, you know, to be specific, as a designer, you know, in kind of our roles, a lot of the work that you do is information gathering and educating your clients. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a client might be coming to you for, you know, whatever it is, they're not only hiring you for your skill set, they're hiring you for your expertise, right? Mm-hmm. And for your ability to kind of guide them through a project's process. And I think something that newer creatives will sometimes do is just kind of assume that the client already knows what they want, mm-hmm. or that they, you know, they understand all of the kind of nuances of working with, you know, a designer or a creative or an artist. And they don't always, you know, they know they need something that is out of their skill set and out of their range, but they don't necessarily know all of the work and the prep and the needs that kind of go into, you know, producing the thing that they want. And so just kind of to that point of assumption, it's like always look for information, gather data, ask questions. Don't be afraid to ask questions. One of the designers that I worked with in the past, she was a colleague and also a friend. She really taught me the value of not being afraid to ask questions. And I still take that with me to this day, where it's like, I love not being able to like to grill people. You don't necessarily have to grill people or interrogate them, but it's like, just ask them, you know, what is the thing for? What is your ultimate goal with this thing? What is the outcome that you're looking to have with this artifact? And then also asking questions, you know, about just context, about, you know, is this copy correct? Is this the terminology that you wanted to use? You know, if something, again, kind of to your point about red flags, if something kind of seems a little strange or a little bit off, don't be afraid to call out, because sometimes people miss things. And sometimes, you know, there's just, you know, little things that people miss. And, you know, you might be just the designer, but you still have eyes and you have a mind. So, you know, if you see something, say something is kind of the point there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Not just on the subway.
Exactly.
This is all ringing true, especially to the conversation that we had with Donald, who is really good at honing in on the messaging, right? Because he has to translate that through so many mediums when you're mm-hmm. putting a film together.
Yeah.
Also, just the point of not making assumptions, I would love to leave that behind, because in my proposal, I may write, I need a table and a chair. And you wouldn't believe how many ways people would interpret table and chair. I just come across that over the last couple years. Uh-huh. It's really this trite thing that I have. It's like a bone I have to pick now, because you would think that if you saw me drawing for 5 hours, that you might want to give me a place to put my legs.
Uh-huh.
But that's not always the case.
Oh, really? Interesting.
I just cannot make any assumptions. So I think that what I'm going to do is I'm going to start illustrating what a table and a chair looks like. I won't tell you the contraptions I've been offered in the last year.
What?
To sit at.
Oh my God, no.
Yeah.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
It's a table. It's a chair.
I know. I know. I have knees, you know, knees that need to go somewhere. Anyways, that's my one assumption I'm going to leave behind last year.
I really like that. Yes.
Okay. What are we taking with us?
What are we taking with? I actually want to go back to leaving behind things, though. Just
still have more to leave
behind. I still
behind.
Have more to leave behind. Okay, imposter good. Syndrome. I know it's like a bigger topic, but it's something, I mean, even for me, you know, I'll tell people like, you know, I doubt myself constantly. I'm always, you know, kind of sitting in, you know, this sort of mental area of like, am I doing things right? Do it? Why do people hire me? Why am I here?
I How?
But I mean, it's strange, but I think it's something that, and maybe it's just an internalized thing. Maybe I just need to talk to my therapist about it, but it's also something that I know affects a lot of, you know, creative people, a lot of artists, filmmakers, mm-hmm. people in that realm, because, you know, sometimes you'll just be looking at a screen, and it's just white, it's just blank. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're sort of hitting that sort of mental wall of like, I know that I want to create something, but I can't get it out of me. I'm like creatively constipated, to use some, yes. some terminology. I think that kind of contributes to imposter syndrome. And then there's obviously that more kind of technical aspect of imposter syndrome, where it's like, I think, especially for certain kinds of people, you know, women, BIPOC, queer people, we often doubt ourselves because society hasn't necessarily given us that privilege to just be who we are and be mm-hmm. confident in who we are and confident in the skill sets that we have and what we can bring, you know, to the economy, to society, to the creative conversation and the table. We're not always allowed that bandwidth or given that respect. And so we start to doubt ourselves and we take that into our work, that self-doubt and that, you know, those incorrect perspectives that society kind of foists on us. So I know that's a larger kind of piece of the conversation, but I think it's so important to always, you know, kind of look inward and think about, you know, what are those sort of self-doubts that I'm carrying with myself? Try to unpack that a little bit mm-hmm. and, you know, leave behind the things that aren't useful to you. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're all just trying to survive and we're trying to create our best work and ideally work with people that are inspiring us and helping us to grow. And, you know, hopefully it's a back and forth kind of relationship. But yeah, in a nutshell, just leave imposter syndrome in the past as much as you can.
Yes, and I want to affirm how talented and how you would be the first person I would go to for so many things.
Okay.
But I think that the imposter syndrome, we all feel a degree of it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that when we put a name to it and you give shape to it,
yes.
the fact that you are thoughtful enough to bring that to light tells people, I mean, you – of all people I know is always learning and evolving and bettering yourself and trying to produce the best, right?
Yeah.
So it's sure. I feel like it's the people that are always trying the hardest that feel that the most. And so I just want to say that.
Oh, well, thank you, man. I mean, well, ditto. Yeah, I mean, you have nothing to have imposter syndrome about.
Oh,
I mean, you're a bucket of talent. And well, this is why I'm so grateful to know you, because I think, you know, having people like you in my life, just again, speaking personally, having people like you in my life is so helpful to sort of affirm that, like, you know, I'm making the right connections and I'm meeting the people that I want to meet. I'm taking the kinds of projects that I want to take. And, you know, all of those sort of circles are kind of aligning. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. So this is just me and Hafsa's love fest. Yay! In the new year. Affirming
just
one
hard
another.
Eyes hard
yeah,
eyes
yeah that's
days.
It kitten cute eyes all
honestly.
Day long
all right, what's next? What do we want to, is it takeaways? Shall we kind of think about takeaways or
yeah I was thinking what did we learn or what did we love
yeah.
or what are we what are we going to continue?
That's a good question. this might be a little bit controversial. Well, maybe it's not controversial. Let me see how I can frame this. I really enjoyed the hybrid work environment. And so I, before, you know, the panini hit us, I was working in an office. So, you know, I would go into downtown Ann Arbor, do my kind of 9 to 5 there, sometimes a 9 to 4 if it was a Friday. And we, you know, it was this great kind of place of, you know, sometimes it could have its sort of, you know, foibles depending on what was happening during the day. But you're surrounded by people, right? And in my situation, I was surrounded by the people that I really enjoyed working with. And the panini did take a little bit of that away. You know, you don't have that access, that in-person access to people that you normally do, which is, you know, especially if you're, you know, like a brand designer or a graphic designer in a creative team, you really need that sort of that collaborative environment, you know, because it's like literally you might be working on something. You know, there's a printer, somebody prints out something. It's like, hey, Hoff, come check this out. Or, you know, you put something up on the wall, or you just call your colleague next over and, you know, like, hey, look at my screen. Like, what does this look like to you? Do you see anything on? Like, give me some feedback. Right. And it's so nice to just have those sort of super quick interactions because it helps you to kind of make sure the work that you're putting out is good and also just to hone your craft and to have conversations. And, you know, with the pandemic, you can't really do that. As well, everybody's at home, everybody's, you know, looking at their screen or, you know, little pixels all day. And it takes away some of that that personality. But what I did find about it, well, what I found helpful about it is that it sort of forces you to almost relearn how to work in a way. And it sort of forces you to adapt to, you know, a bit of an unknown and quite frankly, a difficult situation. So you have to find ways of, you know, making it work for yourself, finding ways of making collaboration work in that kind of environment. And so I think that's partly, you know, where I've gotten this sort of love of exploring new softwares and new tools from, because it's like you want to find ways to sort of replicate a little bit of that in-person experience, but just through the computer, you know. So it's like, how can I have a remote brainstorming session with, you know, either all of my favorite people or people that I don't even know and still have a good outcome and still, you know, have, you know, goals materialize at the end of the meeting, have everyone come to some kind of a consensus and, you know, just feel like we're getting good work done. And so finding tool, I've managed to find tools that kind of help to replicate that, you know, even just using Slack. I know Slack can be a controversial tool. Maybe it's a little bit too on sometimes, but it also helps you to find a way, at least for me, to sort of delineate the way that you communicate to people. So something that I found is like Slack is really good for like quick kind of one-off conversations, kind of similar to like just spinning around and asking your colleague behind you about something. And then if you want to be a little bit more formal about it, then you go, you know, through an email. Or, you know, if you're trying to capture a lot of information and there needs to be a single source of truth, then at that point you should use some sort of a project management tool and make sure that all of those key conversations are captured in there, whether it's from Slack or from email. It all has to go into that one kind of single source of truth. And so I guess this is a really long way of saying that, you know, what hybrid work kind of showed me is that there are ways to be efficient no matter where you are. You know, you don't have to, you know, just work in one place all the time. And especially as creatives, I think we almost have the whole world as our workspace in a way. Like I can take my laptop and I can work from venue. I can go to a coffee shop. I could be in freaking Paris right now. I'd love to be in Paris just doing some design, you know. And you know, I could be with people either way, you know. So I think this hybrid sort of work situation, which is obviously top of mind for a lot of companies right now, is it's kind of a good way to go. It gives you some freedom if you are in an industry that allows you to leverage it. Not everybody obviously has that ability to, you know, work remotely. But if you can leverage it and if you can do it, there's ways to really make it work for you and to, I think, kind of be a boon to your process.
That's a really good one to bring up. I mean, I think that we're still all adapting and playing, right? I find that a lot of times, even if I'm in town with a client or revisiting a project, a lot of people are still just sending me a Zoom invite, which on the mornings that I'm schlepping around in my sweatpants, I'm super grateful for. So
I don't have time to put my shoes on.
I don't have to go outside because it's 20 degrees out this morning.
It's too cold.
No, the value in having that human connection and just tapping someone on the shoulder is still priceless. So, I definitely miss that.
How about you? What do you have for things that you loved this year?
Something that I did from 22, and I am bringing it into this year and challenging myself in this coming year, is doing something creative for myself.
This
also comes in the form of a confession, because one of the things that I was going to do for myself was dabble in moving picture and submitting something to IFFY. I'm not going to make the deadline.
Come on. We extended it to January 15th.
Let's just say it's untenable for me at this moment. At this juncture my life. But that said, I did finish a project that I really like and that I think I will parse out the internet in some form in the next few weeks. But I think what I want to take with me is we do things for clients all the time. Mm-hmm. And we're using that part of our brain where we're like, okay, we're diving into this new project. Let's get through the process. What are my to-dos? Mm-hmm. And I think that if you are a designer or an artist and you're just thinking like, I need a break. Mm. I just read an article about rest this morning that said rest is not literally just laying on the couch and watching TV like I want to do. Mm. Rest can also be doing a to-do list, which gives your brain time to function and flow without there being an obligation. And I was like, that kind of gives me a free pass. I don't feel so guilty, I guess is the word, about just going for a walk or making a list or doing something like that. When I'm sitting on the couch, usually I'm ruminating anyway.
Exactly.
So it might as well be productive.
Right.
So if you're, my task is typically digital illustration. Mm-hmm. I would love to think about objects or painting things or keeping a plant alive in my house, which I don't know how to do.
Same.
So something else other than that, I think doing something outside of client work that is creative and problem solving for self.
Absolutely. I really love that. And it's kind of, it sort of reminds me of what I think Pete was saying about learning kind of new hobbies too. He was talking about, you know, he had taken up, he started a new business recently. And I think he had been talking about something automotive. And so it's just kind of like that idea of picking up new skills that, you know, maybe we're not monetizing it, but we're learning something from it. And we're still getting something out of that experience of, you know, kind of navigating our minds around something that's, you know, it might be a little bit unfamiliar, but it's still like creatively and mentally rewarding. And it's restful in a way, right? Because it's like, it might look like you're working, but, you know, I mean, it's something my mom yells at me about all the time. It's just like she sees me on my computer. She's like, oh, what are you working on? I'm like, well, it's not necessarily work because I'm still having fun while I do it. I have fun when I'm illustrating. I have fun when I'm cutting these podcasts together. And it's like it's something new for me to kind of wrap my head around. So I really like that approach of, you know, finding something that is maybe a little bit outside of your comfort zone and, you know, just challenging yourself a little bit with it.
Yeah, using something else as a bomb.
Yeah, exactly.
In between time.
Yeah, totally. I'd like to kind of, you know, reach out to the younger folks that might be listening to this podcast or their parents, you know, in terms of, you know, what the future could hold for somebody who wants to move into these kinds of, you know, roles outside of or careers outside of, you know, maybe corporate or, you know, healthcare or law or, you know, some of the things that you might more traditionally associate with financial stability. And again, kind of coming back to that idea of, you know, creative work can be a financially stable career. Like anything, you just have to work at it. You have to work at it. You have to be consistent. You have to be resilient and you have to commit, right? And if you're able to do all of those things, it can be so, so rewarding. You know, it's, I'm not going to say that it's the easiest thing to break into all the time. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about, you know, the frictions that can be involved with it, as, you know, with any career. But again, if you stick to things, and especially if you kind of find that niche where, you know, you just say you really enjoy some particular aspect of something, mm-hmm. or you're just a learner and you really enjoy learning. I think this is one of those sort of unique careers where, you know, a lot of people, they might specialize in something, but they're constantly learning about other things that are either adjacent to the media arts or art, or even things that aren't within, you know, the arts realm, like business, you know, mm-hmm. like I think we've talked with Chris Johnson, mm-hmm. He does insurance for creatives. And he himself has a little bit of a creative background, right?
Right.
So it's like he's dabbled, you know, in things outside of his, you know, his area of focus. And I would just encourage, you know, more parents and more people who are interested in the creative arts to really consider, you know, the overlap that this industry has with so many other fields. And just not to discount it as something that, you know, brings value both economically and just mentally. It's like, it's just nice to be able to kind of get your hands dirty, whether it's with art or, you know, something on your computer. And then it's just useful for people. Everywhere you look around you, there's art. Like I'm sitting in a building right now that was designed, and you can see the design mm-hmm. in every element of it. Like, mm-hmm. from the color palette to, you know, everything is just so consistent with the design and the style, the art that they choose to show on the monitors, mm-hmm. the interior design,
the
all
lighting.
Of these, the lighting,
yeah.
the music, the vibes, everything has come together. And this is, you know, kind of a convergence of a lot of different crafts, many of which include design and art in some form. So that's my yearly ramble to people to just take creativity seriously.
Yes, take it seriously. So interesting that you bring that up. I just met with a 13-year-old a few weeks ago because I met her dad at one of the jobs I did a couple of years back. And he said, I love what you do. Would you talk to my daughter about it? And I'm sitting here talking to her about art school and supplies. Mm-hmm. And then I said, oh, how old are you? And she said, oh, I'm 13. And I just thought, oh, geez, I just threw a ton at you. But she took it in and she's very talented. And I think that it's so endearing that mm-hmm. here's a dad who says, I see the skill in my kid. Mm-hmm. Will you talk to them about?
Yes.
Right? Like all of those things that you need to do to build up that
exactly.
long-term vision for what you want to do or be someday. I thought mm-hmm. that was so sweet and so proactive.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. And it was nice. Like I met him at a job that I did for 6 months for a client.
Nice.
And we were both contracting with this client. So he knows, like, you can make mm-hmm. it. You can do this.
Yeah.
And it's just about building the rapport and right. the relationship. And that's all part of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just about having the talent, but having the relationship skills.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And speaking of relationships, just meeting people and getting out there, listening to, you know, other people who are, you know, doing that craft or involved in that craft in some way. Your story kind of reminded me. I was speaking with some kids for, I believe it was a STEAM cafe at the IPSI library, a kind of a group of, I think, middle schoolers and high schoolers. And after I had spoken, one of the parents kind of drove up to me afterwards and she was like, oh my God, my kid is so excited after you spoke. They want to pick up their iPad and start drawing again. And
oh,
I was like,
cool.
That's awesome. Like, that's exactly, and I don't know, you know, maybe that kid would be drawing regardless, but mm-hmm. I feel like it's always so great to be able to, especially as a kid, see other people that are successful in, you know, these kinds of creative things mm-hmm. and, you know, have that opportunity to talk to them kind of one-on-one, get that mentorship, get that inspiration, because it inspires you to go and be like, you know, figure out what you want to do and,
right.
you know, just explore those skill sets and those softwares, those programs, do some finger painting, whatever it might be, you
mm-hmm.
know, like you need that collaboration and that community and, you know, the ability to have those relationships with people. So
absolutely. You Yeah, that's a skill that we all have to work on.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Networking. Oh, God.
Or just
not leaving the party afraid. Early.
Yeah. Go to the party, but maybe skip the quote unquote exactly. networking yeah. event.
Yeah. I'm still bad at talking. I can do this kind of talking, but not like group talking.
Yeah, that's true. Yes. What are we leaving?
What are we leaving? Exactly. I guess to kind of wrap things up a little bit, I just want to thank everybody who has been listening to the podcast up until this episode. We'll have released all of our episodes all at once. So if you've already binged them, then just go back and binge them again. And I highly recommend or encourage anyone to reach out to us at the Cadence Pod. Send us your questions. Send us your feedback. We listen to it all. We love it all. And we appreciate you all for just taking the time out, and we hope to see you next season.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. And thanks to all our guests that participated, Dr. Cam, Pete, Paloma, Donald, Lynette, and Chris. You made this season really full, fulfilling, and rich for us and all of the listeners.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Happy New Year, everybody, and take care.
If you like this podcast, be sure to heart, like, and subscribe to Cadence wherever you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at Cadence Podcast, or check out our episodes and more at thecadencepod.com. We are proudly based in Ypsilanti, Michigan, recording from the podcast studio at Venue by 4M in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And we hope that wherever you're creating from in the world, you are marching to your own cadence. Thanks for listening.
Bye.